You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from UBC, located on the unceded traditional Coast Salish territory of the Musqueam people. Hello, and welcome to Intersections, presented by the Gender Empowerment Collective. This radio show is presented every 4 weeks, where we dig into topics about gender, race, and social justice. We open our show with a conversation between your hosts, followed by an interview with an expert on the topic that we will be discussing.
Hello, listeners, and welcome back to another episode of Intersections. Today, we have a very special episode planned for you. Because from February 3rd to February 11th, it's Fun Drive here at CITR. Fun Drive is CITR's major fundraising event to support our community radio station. So today we are asking you to please donate to support our show, Intersections. Here at Intersections, we have some really cool incentives for you to donate. We have 4 different levels of prizes, depending on the amount that you donate. So if you donate $5 to us, you'll get a CITR sticker. If you donate $15, you'll get an awesome Intersection sticker and a CITR sticker. If you donate $25, you'll get to request a show topic. This is really cool because it can be anything relating to gender that you're interested in. Also, you still get the Intersection sticker and the CITR sticker. Finally, if you donate over $50, you'll get a handmade thank you note signed from all of us here at the Gender Empowerment Collective. Plus, you'll get to be a special guest on our show. But the awesomeness doesn't stop there, because you're still going to receive that CITR sticker, Intersection sticker, and the chance to request a show topic. So join the wave and head to citr.ca/donate to support our show. And don't forget to pick us, Intersections, presented by the Gender Empowerment Collective, on the drop-down menu when you go to donate. Welcome to Intersections episode for Fun Drive 2022. With this year's theme being Plenty of Fish in the CITR and all about online dating and the website Plenty of Fish, we thought we'd dive into some topics discussing all things online dating. Tune in to this episode to hear conversations about ghosting and how to create truly meaningful connections through online dating.
Hi, I'm Hannah. I'm the spoken word coordinator here at CITR, and thanks for having me on the show, Randy.
Hi, my name is Peyton. I'm a member of the Gender Empowerment Collective, and yeah, happy to discuss this topic today. There's a lot to talk about.
I'm Randy. I'm the Gender Empowerment Collective lead, and I'm also quite excited for our conversation today.
Hey, I'm Elle, and I'm just out here, ready.
Hey everyone, I'm Adeline, I'm a current volunteer for the collective, and yeah, looking forward to the discussion today.
Okay, so first up, we have a conversation led by Hannah. So Hannah, would you like to get us started?
For sure. Yeah, again, looking forward to talking about online dating, which is really cursed. I'm also looking forward to what the group has to say. I know there are some really exciting themes that everyone proposed. So what I want to talk about, and this honestly, this sounds like a hot take, is how do we form meaningful connections online? And I'll just talk about this a little bit. So dating apps are criticized for being aloof and detached, right? And rightly so. People treat each other as dispensable because of the plethora of options available. And I'll admit, I'll be the first to admit, I love to hate dating apps. There are, again, many justified reasons. The lukewarm, awkward, and like just downright awful stories I've heard and see floating around the internet. But I'm not interested in talking about that. I have kind of seen a lot of content around that. What I'm curious about is, and I say this at the risk of being earnest, is it possible to create meaningful connections on the apps, or is that a lofty pursuit?
I really like that question, Henna. When I was reading it, I wrote some notes down and I wrote, I don't know. that was like my first reaction. But I think it's really interesting because I've met so many people that are really good at forming connections on the internet. Like they make a lot of friends. They'll just like join Discord servers and then like just make a lot of friends and have like online friends. And I think that translates to be able to like for them to be able to make connections on dating apps. Personally, texting is like my worst liked form of communication. Like I never prefer it over anything else. And I think since texting to me is such a huge part of like the initial online dating process, I personally don't believe that I could ever make a meaningful connection, at least like in that format. Like it almost like you have to like get past that awkwardness to then be able to, you know, meet them and be like, hey, could this go somewhere?
Yeah, just to chime in, I feel like I actually do feel like pretty comfortable with like forming attachments to people over text, mostly just because I have been in an experience where I was in a prolonged sort of like situationship type deal that like took place almost entirely over text and like different messaging things. So I definitely do think it's possible to form connections literally exclusively like over online texting and stuff like that. However, I do think that the issue with it does come with the sort of detachment that it brings with dating apps, just because if you are forming what you feel to be genuine connections, sometimes that's just not enough, just because you both have the ability to be like actively searching for different people the entire time. So I think at the end, it can just kind of end up like with a hurtful result or also just kind of an unfulfilling result, because sometimes I feel like it doesn't matter how strong the connection is, the what if like something else is out there can kind of get in the way, I feel like.
Can I ask a question to Peyton? And just kid, Peyton, I'm glad you're not as jaded as me and Randy. So would you have some tips of like forming connections online and like how to go about that?
Honestly, I wish I could give you a tip, but it is, I feel like, so dependent on just having an instant connection with that person. Because I've met people who I do click with in real life that I did not have like very good text conversations with at all. And I definitely do credit the person that I did have this kind of situation with for being a really great texter. And the thing is, when you're talking to somebody who's a great texter, I feel like it's easy to reciprocate that. But honestly, in general, I just think it comes down to like a sort of specific chemistry that takes place between like two specific people that I'm not sure that you can like recreate exactly.
Yeah, that's a fair point you bring up, Peyton, where it's like, how do we measure what connection really is, right? And how do we measure genuine connection? Like how do we know when it happens and when it doesn't? And I think that just dating apps kind of like the question is really, the relationships are always possible, connections are always possible between people, but like what do dating apps instill in us that potentially like change the way that we look at each other going forward when we go to make those connections with people, right? And how does it maybe like prohibit those connections or just like just change the lens a little bit. But yeah, I think connection is always possible between people, no matter the context necessarily of how you meet.
I do also think that there's kind of like a fatigue that can happen with communicating on dating apps that inhibits connection. I think that everyone kind of has a universal experience of like the first like week that you're on a dating app, you feel pretty optimistic. Like you get all these matches and like you like start all these conversations, But I think that the fatigue that happens from it comes on so quick of just like, you get through a few exchanges that are like, hi, hey, how are you? I'm good. What are you up to? And I think that's like a huge obstacle in forming connection, because after I feel like a little bit of that and a few of those exchanges, our motivation to actually like start interesting, intriguing conversations just like dies. Like people are like, how many times can I be asked my favorite color? I can't do it anymore. And I think that's just like exacerbated on dating apps, because you can go through so many people like in such a short amount.
Yeah, I just want to chime in, and I completely agree with you, Peyton. I think like for me, I try, because I talk about being sarcastic and funny in my profile. So I'm like, oh, I need to be sarcastic and funny like when I text these. And it's really hard to like portray humor well in texting. So like I'll draft texts and it becomes like this process. And I'm like, why are you spending this much time when I send like, you know, we send 10 messages back and forth and then, you know, they're done. And that's it. Like that's the whole thing. So I completely agree. The fatigue is real.
Yeah, no, thank you. I'm very pleased to hear all these responses. Pleased is not the word I use when talking about dating apps. But the reason I was asking you about tips, Peyton, is just for our listeners, because I feel like it's very rare when people are like, oh yeah, I'm okay with forming online connections. It always comes with like a sense of misery of like, yeah, we're on these apps forever. But just to emphasize what I said earlier, it's just like how detached people can be. And it's what you said, Peyton, of like fatigue. We talk about Zoom fatigue, and the online dating fatigue is real. And it's very close to what Zoom fatigue is, of just kind of being constantly online and not, I don't know, just knowing that there's just so many options, right? And nothing matters and in a real sense. So I guess we just don't, I don't know, not really bother giving folks that time and space that we would have if we met IRL.
I know people tell me there are plenty of fish in the sea, but I just feel so lost with all the voices.
Yeah, I just can't find people who think as I do.
Hey there, listeners. Looking for cool, independent content? Want to join schools of like-minded listeners? At CITR, reel in plenty of fish at FunDrive 2022.
If our underwater grotto inspires you, please spare some sand dollars to support our show, Intersections. Don't leave empty-handed. With our Sebastian-level $5 donation, get a CITR sticker. $15 flounder donation, get an Intersections sticker. $25 scuttle-level donation, request a show topic. And finally, the $50 or more Dingle Hopper donation, get a handmade thank you note, chance to be a special guest on the show, and
all prize levels include previous levels.
Come join the wave and head to CIDR.ca/donate to support Intersections.
Yeah, definitely. And that really relates to the topic that I am going to address, which sort of has to do with this situation that went on online the past week or two. I don't know if you guys have heard about the whole West Elm Caleb situation. Just a quick recap. It started on TikTok. Basically, it was all these girls from New York City who realized that they were all dating this guy from named Caleb, who lived in this specific area of New York. And they just realized that he had been dating them simultaneously. He had ghosted several of them after like a handful of dates, after making his interests seem like very clear. These girls, some of them thought that it was going to be long-term. And it just sort of sparked this controversy because some of these girls were equating his actions to almost like abuse. Some of them were saying that this was manipulative. Sometimes they use the word like love bombing. And there seemed to be another half of people that were like, he did absolutely nothing wrong. Like, you guys need to thicken your skin. And it just like got me thinking, because I had like split feelings about it, because as someone who's like primarily dated men, I've been on like the bad side of the power dynamic, the ways that they take advantage of that. So part of me was like, hell yeah, like I feel justified in this outrage. Like I feel like people like should be going off on him. But then the other half of me was like, does someone deserve to be doxxed, or does somebody deserve to be like, people were threatening to like get him fired from his job. And I'm like, okay, where does ghosting fall on kind of the continuum of harm? And like, how do we respond to it? And are there moments where it's justified? Are there moments where it's acceptable? Because I've been ghosted and I've ghosted people, so I don't really know like where I fully stand on it.
Oof. Well, thank you for that spicy question, Peyton. It's funny that you asked that, because I just read about this cursed online story today. And yeah, it's wild. I think my feelings and my thoughts about, I mean, I don't care about it. I mean, that probably sounds, I don't know, harsh, but you know. What I will say is that I read a tweet that really sums up my response, which where this woman tweeted of like, I can't believe y'all are making me side with this. I don't know. It was something like womanizer douche or something. And I think the reaction, like, yes, he was manipulated for sure, but I think he was definitely witch hunted, which was really extreme. And he was apparently his banking details and stuff and housing address and everything was leaked online, which I think is really extreme and not okay. And I can't believe I'm saying that, and almost like at the risk of taking his side, which I feel like that is definitely not justified. And he didn't deserve that. Like, yeah, he seems like an awful person. But moving along that, I, you know, it's interesting. I think sometimes just existing, a lot of folks, I feel like, just exist on their spheres of Twitter and Instagram, and then that echo chamber where things really escalate and you're like, are you not seeing the reality? And there's a lot of enabling behavior where like someone should have been like, oh no, this is awful, this guy's awful, but let's try to move on. And I don't think that was abusive behavior. But kind of moving on from that and just talking about ethics of ghosting, I feel like it's very problematic how we have normalized ghosting. Like, it's okay, but it's really not okay. It's so disrespectful. And it gets a little murky. It's like, when is it okay and when is it not? And I feel like if you've met the person in real life and you've had a conversation face-to-face, then you really owe them an explanation. Like, no matter what happened, you lost interest, you don't like them, just tell that person. They literally, like, they deserve closure, right? So what I feel is that, yeah, if you haven't met them, if you've just exchanged one or two texts, and sure, everyone's texting with everybody all the time, sure, maybe, yeah, you don't have to you don't owe them an explanation. But if you've met in person, then I feel like it's really to not respond or to just ghost. And I feel like we shouldn't be enabling this kind of behavior.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with what Hannah said. I definitely agree with, like, I was thinking about the same thing, like the line, I guess, of like where you draw it and like when you can do it. Again, not like a seasoned online dater here, but I do think, like, in the beginning, I don't think you owe these people that much. You know, at the end of the day, like, you just saw their picture, you sent them a few texts. The expectation should be pretty low. I think everybody should have very low expectations at that point in the online dating relationship. But yeah, I mean, as someone who's been ghosted by friends, it hurts. Like, as far as like, if you have a connection with that, if you have like some sort of relationship with that person and they ghost you, that's incredibly painful. And it's, yeah, it's not okay.
Yeah, no doubt. It's really, it's like painful stuff. Which is why it's kind of funny to talk about, like, Hannah, you said the ethics of ghosting, and that made me laugh, because it's like, yeah, the politics of like, is this right or wrong? And this question, Peyton, really just like took me for a spin, because I was like, damn, like, what do we really owe to anyone? You know, like, what is it that we owe to people as like fellow people? Maybe it's not so much about like, do we like stop texting them when they do this or whatever? And more just about like respect for ourselves, right? And like holding people accountable out of self-respect when they do something that is too far or when they hurt us. And that's going to look different in every single situation. But yeah, it's really, it's not an easy thing to grapple with and to a question to dwell in. It's a big one.
So this is basically combining the two topics that were already addressed. Like when it comes to like online dating, because first they emphasize like the profile and the characteristics. So basically you have like a laundry list, and then people might be like, okay, well, this trait is compatible with me. And then I'm pretty sure like people probably subconsciously they go through the profiles and they're like, oh, this is what I define as compatible. And then yeah, it probably does create a bit of a, not really sure what's the word for it, but yeah, people might be more likely to see the people online as being dispensable because there isn't like a connection hasn't really formed yet. So it's kind of tricky because like we mentioned, it does take time to form connections, and it is different in IRL. And so hopefully I can try to provide some supporting details like when I present my topic, like on like how more meaningful connections can be formed. But that's kind of my take on that. I haven't exactly tried online dating, so like in terms of like what we owe to people we talk to online, like I'm still developing opinions on that.
Yeah, like just to sum it up, I think that my takeaway from the whole situation sort of was that obviously I think the degree of backlash which he got was totally insane. And I think that it was more demonstration of people just enjoying the spectacle of it as opposed to actually feeling that anything harmful had actually occurred. That being said, I also did think that it brought up like an interesting conversation about, as you were saying, like what we owe people. Because I think there's sort of like dueling narratives right now. Some of them are like, you don't owe anyone anything, like you need to like protect your own peace and like stuff like that. And at the same time, there's also discourses that are like, we need to have more empathy for the people around us, et cetera, et cetera. So I think at the end, yeah, it is just like a balance between the two. I think that there are some like hard and fast rules, such as like, if you meet someone in person, obviously, yeah, maybe you should let them know. But overall, I do think that it's just like a very messy topic that doesn't exactly have a right or a wrong answer.
The haunting debut album Black Moon by Civic TV provides a cinematic backdrop, a modern-day symphony of the dark and light that is our collective reality. Take a listen to Black Moon, now available via Flemish Eye Records and on all streaming platforms.
I know people tell me there are plenty of fish in the sea, but I just feel so lost with all the voices.
Yeah, I just can't find people who think as I do.
Hey there, listeners. Looking for cool, independent content? Want to join schools of like-minded listeners? At CITR, reel in plenty of fish at FunDrive 2022.
If our underwater grotto inspires you, please spare some sand dollars to support our show, Intersections. Don't leave empty-handed. With our Sebastian-level $5 donation, get a CITR sticker. $15 flounder donation, get an intersection sticker. $25 scuttle-level donation, request a show topic. And finally, the $50 or more dingle hopper donation, get a handmade thank you note, chance to be a special guest on the show, and...
All prize levels include previous levels.
Come join the wave and head to CIDR.ca/donate to support Intersections.
So the next topic we're going to be discussing relating to online dating is the topic that I put forth. So I'm really interested in talking about the role of physical and sexual attraction in online dating. I think those of us who have experience with online dating apps or even just seeing them, we know that the basic structure of Tinder, Bumble, and most of the other app-based ones are you see a picture, you swipe right, you swipe left. There might be a bit of a bio if you like click on it to see it. But the basic structure is based around these pictures and images. So one thing I really got to thinking about is how this format of a dating app excludes so many people. So I was specifically thinking about like people who don't experience sexual attraction in the same way that, like, you know, we could say that, you know, maybe a lot of people do. So people falling under the umbrella of asexual. So these could be aromantic, demisexual, or asexual. So my question is, do you think that there's a way that online dating in this like convenient way that we think of like Tinder and Bumble, do you think it can move away from this reliance on physical and sexual attraction, or is it kind of like a lost cause because so much of these apps is based around you developing very quickly this physical and sexual attraction to people that you could be interested in?
That's a very interesting topic, Randy. I mean, there's no denying it, right? Online dating is hypersexualized, from objectifying men's heights to women's body type to the point that it's so internalized and men do it themselves. Where how many times have we seen men just have 6 feet in their bio? Like, nobody cares. Do you have a personality? Probably not. And women with their selfies, which is like, yeah, this is what people want, so this is what I'm going to objectify for myself, which is just, it's sad. It's like, oh, this is what it is now, right? And sometimes dating apps just feel like Instagram, quite toxic and vain, where it's just like the hot people club and that's all that matters. I unfortunately am not optimistic about the dating culture changing anytime soon, because like it's by the virtue of it and the structure is like, that's all we have to go off of, right? And like, I get it. Like, you, I literally am looking just at your face and I don't know anything about you. And like, I get it. Borderline, we do want to be attracted to people in some capacity. But like, is that enough? I'm going to say no. A lot of times we see folks don't even bother to write a bio as if that doesn't matter, right? And it's just, if that's a red flag to me. I think just going off of like what I was talking about and what Peyton mentioned earlier, it like leaves a lot of folks jaded who are actually trying to find a meaningful connection online with like, we just live online now. COVID has really showed us that, yeah, we're not meeting anyone and we just exist in online spheres. And it's like, where else do you go? But then just by the virtue of it, it seems like that's how you operate, right? And I don't know. I don't have any answers and I don't know if it's going to change anytime soon.
I definitely agree with you there. It's funny, this question actually reminded me, I don't know if any of you guys have seen Ted Lasso, but in the show, they actually have a dating app that is based around this idea. It's no pictures, you don't see anybody's face, like people are just expected to form connections based off the profiles they see and then the conversations that they have on the app. And I remember watching that show and being like, that will never exist in real life, or at least not successfully, because I was like, in this day and age, oh, that sounds so corny saying it, but in this day and age, I don't think that anybody would be willing to invest their time in someone that they weren't sure that they were sexually attracted to. And obviously that differs for people who are like on the ace spectrum. Obviously that wouldn't factor in as much. Maybe that app could be successful for that demographic in particular. But as far as like a wider demographic, I just don't really see it happening. But that being said, I do think that there are like maybe aspects of dating apps, if you're using them in a particular way, that branch off a little bit from like physical attraction. And what I mean by that is just kind of said, when I'm like swiping through, if I see somebody who doesn't have a bio or something, like I'm not gonna swipe right on them. Or if they're, if the personality that they're construing in their profile, I can automatically tell doesn't really align with like the type of person I am. Obviously there's like a wide array of ways you can figure that, but I'm not gonna swipe right on them. So there are like certain ways in which I think personality does factor in. When I'm looking at profiles, I look for people who have similar styles to me, people who have similar music tastes. If they answer a question and I see that they like the same like movies and stuff as me, like that will obviously factor into my decision to swipe right on them. So I do think that there are ways in which it's not entirely shallow if that's how you're using the app and not just like zooming through, swiping through like the first like hot person you see. But yeah, in general, I just think that it's all very attraction based and I don't see it changing anytime soon.
Yeah, I completely, I can't think of the dating show that's directly related to like what you're talking about, Peyton, like dating apps that are just based upon like bio or like personality and stuff. But those dating shows are so interesting because they're always just like conventionally hot people. Like it's still, yeah, the circle. Like it's Love is Blind, actually. That's what I was thinking of. Like, yeah, so it's like they're still stereotypically hot people. So at the end of the day, you're like, wow, this doesn't really change anything. But yeah, I definitely think all of your points were really interesting because yeah, this is just something I think about. Like I am demisexual, so it's definitely like interesting to think about like how, you know, I move through this like platform trying to like form connections but also realizing that like, you know, so much of it is based around just like seeing this picture. But I definitely like your idea, Peyton. Like I fully do not swipe on profiles that don't have a bio. Again, like Hannah said, it's a big red flag. I'm not interested in messaging that person. But yeah, I do think that there are like small ways, but overall, yeah, I don't know how much hope I have either. But yeah, I'm gonna pass it off to Elle now for our next topic.
I know people tell me there are plenty of fish in the sea, but I just feel so lost with all the voices.
Yeah, I just can't find people who think as I do.
Hey there, listeners. Looking for cool, independent content? Want to join schools of like-minded listeners? At CITR, reel in plenty of fish at Fundrive 2022.
If our underwater grotto inspires you, please spare some sand dollars to support our show, Intersections. Don't leave empty-handed. With our Sebastian level $5 donation, get a CITR sticker. $15 flounder donation, get an intersection sticker. $25 scuttle level donation, request a show topic. And finally, the $50 or more dingle hopper donation, get a handmade thank you note, chance to be a special guest on the show, and
all prize levels include previous levels.
Come join the wave and head to CITR.ca/donate to support Intersections.
Sweet. Thank you, Randy. Yeah, so I wanted to talk a bit about going like zooming out of the picture of dating apps and looking at the context of like the ways in which we are living politically, socially, emotionally, romantically, everything, right? And talk about romance and colonialism and how romance aids in the upholding of colonialism. So Dean Spade talks about this thing called the romance myth, which is the idea that there's a committed, you know, there's such thing as a committed romantic relationship being the most important kind of relationship, like the hierarchy of love and of relationships. That there's something wrong with you if you aren't in one. The romance myth says that you will be happy once you finally find one. You'll feel loved and be whole because you'll be completed. And that it's kind of a sense of this is the only thing that matters. And it's us against the world, babe, if it's monogamy. So yeah, my question is like, where does dating apps come into this sense of the romance myth? And how does it aid in romance upholding colonialism, right? So to put it concise, how and in what ways is the nature of online dating, which is choosing a partner or a prospect based on a description or their looks, not on the feeling of connection, kind of what we talked about, and through our phones, how is this a product of our colonial reality? And in which ways does it reinforce it? I'd love to hear what you guys think.
Well, if we take Hollywood, for example, there's, you know, like the way that love is portrayed in films and through various other forms of media, there's a huge focus on like the passionate aspect of love, which is important, but there's many different aspects of love too. Like we mentioned, the connection part, developing an emotional connection versus like only focusing on the physical aspects. So the way that attraction and love is portrayed in the media definitely might feed into the myth that you just mentioned.
Yeah, I really like that prompt, Elle. When I first read it, the first thing I thought of is like the hierarchy aspect and like believing that like romantic relationships are like the most important. That's something that I've never thought. Like I was lucky that I got away from that pretty quickly. But yeah, like I have quite a few people, they're not so much in my life anymore, but that did really value that and like had these like really strong friendships and relationships with family members. And then those like fell to the back burner when they got a romantic partner, which I personally think is really sad because I think like friendships and even like, I think to me, like a big warning sign that we've moved like to that idea that like, the role that romantic relationships play is the fact that when you use the term relationship in any other context that's not romantic, people are like, why are you calling it a relationship? That's not a relationship. But it is a relationship. Like you have a relationship with this person. Like that's what the word means. But we've associated it so closely with the term romance or romantic that like your brain doesn't want to make it separate, even though like, yeah, you have relationships with all of these other people in your life. And yeah, they're all important.
Yeah, I definitely think that that's an interesting point. And I do think that you're right. It is kind of bizarre how our idea of community has kind of dissolved and the place of romance has kind of filled that void where I think that community should be, whether that be with like chosen family or your actual family. When we're thinking in terms of romance, one thing I think about in like a colonial context, maybe like the concept that a lot of different cultures, it's a lot more common for them to like have intergenerational like housing situations, like in which like you live with your parents and your grandparents, like all under the same roof. And I think that's actually really beautiful and a great way to live. And I think that it like really would actually enforce like a strong community and like family support. But I think that like in our current context, it's just like you find the one and that person is your person and you like go on and you live your life with that person solely. And I do think that it's really harmful, especially if that relationship fails or if that relationship turns abusive or toxic, or even, yeah, if you just end up on your own naturally and then you think, what do I do now? Like I've ingrained this person in my life to the extent that that's like my entire world. And I do think that that can be really harmful. And I think that dating apps obviously play into it because they're such an ever-present like part of like the entire dating scene that I think it's almost like you turn 18 and you download Tinder, like, or you turn 18 and you download Bumble. And it's almost just like an instant thing of like trying to find that connection. So I think it definitely enables the process.
Yeah, thanks for your question, Elle. Very interesting. To answer the first part, and I had not heard of the romance myth, which is fascinating. And this, that's something bell hooks talk about as well, how we place and value romance and romantic relationships over everything. And when I say romantic relationships, I'm talking about heteronormative romantic relationship, a man and a woman. And that's what women are taught from day one, right? The persuade of the one, your other half is all that matters, and you're going to get married and buy a house, but that's the only persuade worth pursuing. And that's when you've made it, right? And women internalize that and, you know, kind of, I don't know, enable that as well amongst their circles. But to just talk about, and it's interesting, the parallels between romance and colonialism, which I've like never drawn that parallel. And there is so much, there's a lot of commonality when we talk about that, because like, it just makes me think a lot of our world and reality bleeds into dating spaces, right? Like, of course, systemic racism, capitalism, heteronormativity, that's our reality. And why wouldn't it exist in dating spaces? Your question reminds me of this podcast I listened to on Media Girlfriends, where this Black woman from Toronto, she does this experiment where she realizes she's on the dating app and she's not getting a lot of matches. And then she lightens her skin. She's the same person. She just lightens her skin and she gets thrice as many matches. And she's like, I'm the same person. I have the same features. It's just my skin that's light. And so you can see Eurocentric beauty standards. Or I've heard of this other podcast, Invisibilia, where East Asian men don't get barely any matches because film and years of Hollywood have really desexualized East Asian men, right? The way they're portrayed as like nerdy and not getting dates or not getting girls. And it's the opposite of like hypersexualization where that's just obviously very harmful and unfortunate because so much of our society and our attitudes towards groups really bleed into dating spaces, and they're not safe spaces. They're not inclusive. Like if you ask folks and they're like, oh yeah, of course I'm open to whatever, but then they're not, right? Like a lot of biases exist and it's awful.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, the online dating realm totally encapsulates and just like makes it so much more intense. But then there's this sense of, you get questioned if you're like, no, I don't want to like online date, or I don't want to be actively seeking this like romantic relationship to fulfill my life. You know, if you don't date or something, it's like, what, are you okay? But yeah, what I kind of came to with this was that both colonialism and romance hold something together, and I think that they both tell us a story of that we are not enough, right? And that to be enough, we need land, we need status, we need success, we need career, and we need a partner. And that is where being civilized comes from, you know. Those are my thoughts. And I'll pass it to Adeline for our last question.
Start off your new year with a new skill. This spring, Emily Carr University's Continuing Studies is proud to offer courses and workshops online and in person. Choose from over 100 courses, from weekend workshops designed for beginners to skills-focused certificate programs. Whether you're seeking an artistic outlet or looking to add to your professional skill toolkit, Emily Carr has you covered. From painting to print media, industrial design to web design, there's something for everyone. Find your fit at ecuad.ca/cs. Register now and commit to your creative future.
Hey, what's wrong?
I want to go to therapy, but I can't afford it.
Well, did you know there's a show on CITR where you can get free therapy every other week?
Really? What's it called?
It's called Therapy Hour, and it airs every other Tuesday at 6 p.m.
You mean I can get free therapy every 2 weeks just by listening to the radio?
That's right, and it doesn't even cost you a dime.
Wow, I won't have to cry anymore.
Actually, crying is pretty good for you. I learned that by listening to Therapy Hour on CITR 101.9 FM, because everyone needs therapy.
But not everyone can afford it. You get what you need.
I know people tell me there are plenty of fish in the sea, but I just feel so lost with all the voices.
Yeah, I just can't find people who think as I do.
Hey there, listeners. Looking for cool, independent content? Want to join schools of like-minded listeners? At CITR, reel in plenty of fish at Fundrive 2022.
If our underwater grotto inspires you, please spare some sand dollars to support our show, Intersections. don't leave empty-handed. With our Sebastian-level $5 donation, get a CITR sticker. $15 Flounder donation, get an Intersection sticker. $25 Scuttle-level donation, request a show topic. And finally, the $50 or more Dinglehopper donation, get a handmade thank you note, chance to be a special guest on the show, and...
All prize levels include previous levels.
Come join the wave and head to CITR.ca/donate to support Intersections.
Yeah, so just building on a bit from Elle's topic, when it comes to like dating apps, definitely there is a focus like on the physical attraction aspect, as we saw, and that's kind of pervasive where it seems like everything is zoned into finding the right person. And sometimes that might happen at the expense of like other relationships in our life, as we've heard. So even if we choose to use dating apps in a way where we're trying to look past the initial physical attraction, it can be difficult because of the environment like the app facilitates. And so this transitions into the question, the topic that I wanted to bring up, which is how we can possibly enhance virtual connections, even though it's difficult. And so I'm going to begin with a story and try to relate it to the things that we've been discussing. So this might seem like a very random story, but just bear with me here. So this happened quite recently, within the last 2 months. So this is the Blenderbox Cats story. So sometime around Black Friday last year, a queer couple from Vancouver Island decided to buy a Vitamix blender. And when the blender arrived, their cats took an interest in it, and they have three cats, and they thought it was perfectly normal when one of the cats started jumping on the box and sitting there. But then they realized that the three cats were like taking turns like sitting on the box, and if they didn't physically move the cats, because they wanted to see like what would happen if they didn't touch anything, because they thought it was quite amusing, like how long they would continue just sitting there. And it seemed like every time one cat got off, another would take its place. And this has gone on for around like 2 months now. And they've even made like a whole Facebook page, and like they have like regular updates, and like 50,000 people started following it. And so there's this like internet fascination with this phenomenon. So how does this tie into online dating themes? Well, just as people become fascinated with cats, like I wanted to explore how cute things can factor into like themes of attraction, and like how we're drawn to these things, and how exploring this can possibly enhance virtual connections. If we go back to our discussion on like the focus of dating apps and how sometimes they can overly focus on physical attraction, when it comes to being drawn to cute things physically, there's no denying that there are certain features like large eyes, a small nose, and like a round head, like those kinds of features really draw people in because it reminds us of like children. And so that's what the psych research shows. But on another level, there's also brain processes involved. And so what I wanted to explore was how does this affect like our mental processing? Like could it be that when we share these kinds of stories, does that engage the brain more, and would it make us more compassionate? Before I present any additional findings, I would be interested to hear what you all think about this.
Yeah, I can go. I want to say thanks to Adeline for ending on a wholesome note. I can definitely be, I'm a skeptic, so definitely, you know, but I still love cute things. I'm a big fan of GIFs. They just almost always encapsulate what I'm feeling. And sometimes I just want to talk in GIFs, you know, which almost mostly makes me feel better. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's something to be said about, and I don't know if I'm exactly getting at what you are posed to the group, Adeline. But when I think of cute things, and like, I feel like for me, if I'm forming a connection with someone, be it a platonic or romantic, whatever, and then it's like, oh, but they know I'm going to find this cute and they send me this gift. And I'm like, oh, that's so cute. You know what I mean? And then it makes you smile. And it's just being on the same wavelength. And it's something silly of like, oh, like, I don't know, the Bernie meme. Like, I love it so much. It was my desktop. And so it's just something to be said of like, oh, this person knows me. And there's something very quirky about me and something very ordinary, but something, it still is something that, I don't know, cheers you up. And yeah, so I think that's kind of what came to my head, but also something which is a bit unrelated, the barge in Vancouver, which I'm sure everyone's familiar of. I think it was New Year's Eve or New Year's Day, when a gay couple, one of them like proposed their partner in front of the barge. And I thought that was very cute. Yeah, I like cute things. That's my answer.
Okay, so yeah. So basically like, yeah, like I intended this for it to be like a lighthearted take on like if cute things can possibly enhance the connections. Obviously, you know, like when we're talking about like dating apps and like meeting people online, it might not exactly like lead to like a very deep connection simply because we share a gift. But hopefully during these times, especially during COVID, as one of the owners of the cat mentioned, there's a lot going on in the world that's negative. So hopefully like sharing these kinds of stories can improve people's moods, especially if they're meeting people online. So yeah, I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts on this, Randy.
Yeah, I was just gonna say very similar to what Henna said. I like cute things. I love my TikTok feed is queer people, cats, and social justice content. That's the three things that I want in my life every day. But I think like beyond that, the role in dating apps is it's something very simple that we can bond over very quickly. Like it becomes, instead of like, you know, having that like awkward conversation, you know, your hobbies and everything, it's like, you can just like send, you know, a funny meme or something, and then you can laugh about it. But at the same time, it also like showcases a little bit about their humor, right? Like, is it a similar humor or not? Because if I find this meme funny and you don't, then this probably isn't going to work out very well. So yeah, it's interesting how something that we consider like so simple and maybe even mundane can actually be like a huge element of like the online dating world.
Yeah. So just to wrap up on that, like, hopefully like occasionally, sharing these kinds of things can also enhance people's focus if they're interacting with people online, because like we mentioned, sometimes people can grow a bit detached when they're using these types of apps, because like there's so many options and like you're mostly looking at people's traits, and it's like hard to form deeper connections. And so researchers have found that just by looking at images of cute things, they did improve like performance when people are doing like certain tasks. So hopefully, I'm not really sure if there's been a longer term study done on this, but hopefully if it makes people like more alert when they're interacting with other people, that could be a positive development. Because when we look at the neural mechanisms of what happens, like after we look at cute things, there is faster brain activity in regions that are associated with emotion and pleasure. And so hopefully if people need to like, if people want to kickstart like a connection online and they're not really sure, like if they're not really sure about like the other person's interests yet, hopefully that can help with that.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. And as Hannah mentioned, I think it's nice to leave off on that light note of cats. But yeah, we are out of time, but I'm sure that all of us and probably those of you listening could talk about a lot of these topics for a lot longer than we have. So please consider our short conversations just an introduction, just the tip of the iceberg. But we encourage you to continue these conversations with your friends and family after you listen to this.
I know people tell me there are plenty of fish in the sea, but I just feel so lost with all the voices.
Yeah, I just can't find people who think as I do.
Hey there, listeners. Looking for cool, independent content? Want to join schools of like-minded listeners? At CITR, reel in plenty of fish at Fundrive 2022.
If our underwater grotto inspires you, please spare some sand dollars to support our show, Intersections. Don't leave empty-handed. With our Sebastian-level $5 donation, get a CITR sticker. $15 flounder donation, get an intersection sticker. $25 scuttle-level donation, request a show topic. And finally, the $50 or more dingle hopper donation, get a handmade thank you note, chance to be a special guest on the show, and...
All prize levels include previous levels.
Come join the wave and head to CITR.ca/donate to support Intersections.
Thank you for listening to our special episode of Intersections presented by the Gender Empowerment Collective for CITR's Fund Drive 2022. We hope you've enjoyed some of our conversations about online dating. I especially was interested in the one about cats. Who knew that a story about cats could be related to online dating? We hope this radio show has showcased the importance of CITR in the community, and we hope that maybe we've shown you a little bit about all of the great content that comes out of CITR from all of the amazing programmers and volunteers. So we hope that you'll spare us some sand dollars to support CITR so we are able to continue making this awesome content for our amazing listeners.
This episode of Intersections is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Radio Meters program.
Thank you for listening to Intersections, presented by the Gender Empowerment Collective. Tune in again in 4 weeks to catch our next episode. We can always be reached at our email, genderempowerment@citr.ca, for comments, feedback, and topic ideas. Music